It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Special. I am your host, Thor Nystrom. Today, I'm joined by another special guest, my former NBC Sports colleague, Eric Frotine, to discuss this year's offensive line class. You can find Frotine at Twitter at CFF Frotine. Frotine, it's awesome to have you on today. Why don't you get us started by talking about your fifth offensive tackle, because we got a lot of offensive linemen to talk about today.
Yeah, it's going to be an action-packed show with the offensive line and IOL. We're going to start with my number five tackle. It was close between him and Anton Harrison. I know who for Oklahoma is a favorite of yours, but I'm going to go with Matthew Bergeron, Syracuse, the Canadian offensive tackle, like myself, Mr. Frotone, Mr. Bergeron from north of the border over there at Syracuse. Plenty of experience leading the way for a workhorse running back in Sean Tucker. As you know, being a college fantasy guy, Thor, in 2021, this is a heavy, heavy run balance offense for Syracuse. Pretty much all they did between Sean Tucker and quarterback Garrett Schrader, it was just run power. However, this year in comes new offensive coordinator Robert Anai, who was at Virginia and led the NCAA, was at least top three in the last three seasons in terms of passing attempts. So he comes in and boom, changes everything around for Syracuse. I think it really helped Bergeron because he went from being pretty much, you know, in that previous offense, he's just running power the whole time to having to do a little bit more in the pass sets. And that's something he needed to kind of develop with, because when I look at Bergeron, you know, his athleticism is there. I'm not worried about him getting out there on the screens, you know, firing out. That's not my concern. My concern deals more with that pass pro and not having that experience. 19 penalties across his previous two campaigns. Hand leverage is a little bit tough when it comes to him because he's only got 9.5-inch hands, 33.75-inch arms. So on the outside, it's important for him to stay square. I think he does a great job with his kick and with his set, staying in front of players. As long as he can be in front, he's fine. You know, surprisingly, you're not going to overpower him despite the fact, you know, he's 318 or so and doesn't have the arm leverage. But I really feel like when he grows into the tools he has, his athleticism, you know, that's all there. The bones are there. If he can go and sort of get a little more coaching, a little more refinement at the next level, I think he's got the potential to be a starting left tackle.
Yeah, so Bergeron is just outside. He's my number six guy. You had mentioned that Harrison is your number six. So, I mean, but I think we have both those guys very close, you know, in terms of the fifth against the sixth guy, whatever. My fifth offensive tackle is actually your fourth offensive tackle. So why don't you cue up the discussion of DeJuan Jones from Ohio State?
DeJuan Jones, when you talk about power, look no further than DeJuan Jones. My gosh, 6'8" and a quarter, 374 pounds, 36 3/8 inch arms. This is superhuman type proportions we're dealing with. And really the only, I mean, if we're going with a comp recently, you had your Minnesota guy, Daniel Falele, last year, who was up in that four Bills mark. But I mean, we're talking about, it's pretty much those two in that rarefied air. Now with Jones, good luck bull rushing him. Just forget it. Don't even think about it. Where he is vulnerable, you know, is what I see, is when you're attacking his edges and you come in with the shoulder shakes on some of those bigger edges and the speed. You can attack him with that speed, but once he gets his hands on you, they're like vice grips. Like, you're not escaping. An 11-inch and 6/8 hand span. I mean, it's like a basketball. It's like a basketball is a softball to him. So, with obviously limitation when it comes to his size, he's going to be pegged to that right tackle spot, which I don't have a problem with. It could hurt him in terms of the eyes of the NFL where he should be picked. But man, with his size, with his raw brute strength and just how hard it is to even get around him, despite the fact he's got a little slow feet, you got to respect DeJuan Jones and what he's capable of doing.
Yeah, you said it, man. I have him as the fifth tackle, and that's mostly just because he's going to be the right tackle. But, you know, like, he's not going to play left tackle in the NFL, although we did say that about Orlando Brown, the guy at Compton, too, and he was able to figure that out. But DeJuan Jones is, like, the most straightforward tackle in this entire class. You're going to stick him at right tackle on day one, and he's going to do DeJuan Jones things. You talk about, like, how massive that kid was, so – when we were in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, there was a moment where Derek Brown and I, my colleague, we had gone down into the tunnels because we were going to go down on the field, you know, and start doing the interviews like after one of the practice sessions. And DeJuan Jones was in the tunnel with us. And like, I had this moment. You remember when Sam Neill gets out of his Jeep in Jurassic Park and takes the glasses off slowly because he sees the Tyrannosaurus Rex? That was the moment seeing DeJuan Jones like in a space like that, so confined. It was like, oh my gosh. Like, and you mentioned Falele, that was the guy from the last class where, like, we were wondering when he walked out for his podium session, like, is the podium going to be big enough to hold this guy? The same sort of thing with DeJuan Jones, and a decent athlete for being that friggin' enormous, right? Like, I think he's a better, you know, athlete, for instance, than a guy like Phil Loadholt. Certainly, if he would have tested, he would have tested better than Orlando Brown, who was really poor at that. And that was one of the reasons why we had some questions about his evaluation. But DeJuan Jones, you're going to put him on the right side. You mentioned nuclear reactor power. He's going to move people in the run game. He always has, and he always will. So DeJuan Jones is my fifth guy. My fourth guy was the aforementioned Anton Harrison. Froton, you have him six. Harrison, what you like, very good athlete. He moves like a player who is much, much smaller than him. You like the tools. You like the projectability with him. The thing you want to add with him, it's power. That's really the only concern I have for him. But I liked the progression season in, season out with Anton Harrison with the pass pro work. He's becoming more of a technician, whereas early on in his career, it was just sort of the tools. But the power thing is something that we're just not sure about yet. You know, he has that projectable frame, so, you know, he potentially could gain some weight, whatnot. But that's the one thing I would like to see added to his game. He might have to play in a zone system. Froton, let's go to your third offensive tackle.
Yeah, third offensive tackle is another Senior Bowl guy that you know, obviously you were there and you mentioned. I know you got to take a look at Darnell Wright for Tennessee, another right tackle who initially started out at left tackle in Tennessee and ironically was kicked over to right tackle by Wanye Morris, who went to Oklahoma, you know, transferred there, and was kicked to right tackle by the previously mentioned Anton Harrison. So interesting little weave we're running with those three tackles for this particular class. But with Donnell Wright, 6'5", 333 pounds, just a brick of a human. And you saw him at the Senior Bowl against the best of the best and absolutely, without doubt, solidify himself as somebody who needs to be respected, because you couldn't move him backwards. particularly, and his girth, you know, just allowed him to really drop that anchor really effectively. And he's more athletic than you think for a 333-pound guy with a 9.77 RAS score. He's got small hands, you know, the 9-inch hands and what have you, and his arms aren't the prototypical length, which is why he kind of ended up kicking over to right tackle. But, man, I like his kick sets, you know. He's a little rigid, you know, sure, in his knees. You know, he can bend a little bit, but, man, the power, the raw power and the versatility that you get. You can kick him over to left tackle, you know, and have that swing possibility if, you know, your normal bookend goes down. So I like the fact that he could do that. You know, I'd like to see a little more aggressiveness at the point of attack. He can be a little bit passive because he is so strong. But I think it really helps him in terms of the way that he approaches his pass sets and how patient he can be. So I'm a big fan of Darnell Wright and think that, you know, his proportions, everything is ready to plug and play.
1,000%. Yeah, this is the one commonality that we had on our top five offensive tackle list. I also have Darnell Wright number three. He's a guy that grows on you more and more the more that you watch him. And part of this is previously in his career, he was just so inconsistent. And then everything came together this past year. Darnell Wright finished number three amongst FBS offensive tackles by giving up a pressure on only 1.7 of his pass blocking snaps last season. Also zero sacks, over 507 pass pro reps. And then you mentioned his special sauce, his power. That guy is a home run hitter in terms of the power. He will shut down any bull rusher like he's turning off a faucet. It is absolutely no problem. He back on the rocking chair. Nope. I mean, that's you have to beat that kid with movement on the edge if you're going to beat him at all. And that's really the only thing that we're concerned about. You brought up the length and the smaller hand size. The other thing you wonder about is with the foot speed out there, you know, when you're projecting him to the next level. Obviously, he was a very good in pass pro last season, but he proved the concept of some of the different athletic traits, like you mentioned, the 96 percentile RAS. The one thing that he ducked, it was interesting. He ducked the three cone drill and the shuttle, the short shuttle, the one agility drill that he did do. It was his worst test of all them. So, I mean, that just goes in line with what you see on his tape. But I think he's going to be able to hang and be a very, very, very good right tackle. I think he's not playing left tackle in the NFL, in my opinion. But if he doesn't succeed at right tackle, well, now you have a stud guard. Like, so that's where, like, you can feel comfortable about ranking him a little bit higher because you have that second bullet where you know that that's going to work. His game would be awesome at guard, but he also could be a very, very, very good NFL right tackle. But between those three positions, you're going to get a good player at definitely one of them. Now, Froton, as we move to I'd be remiss if we get out of the Darnell Wright conversation without mentioning you just totally shut down Will Anderson too, which you just have to bring up, you know, especially when we're talking about the movement, stuff like that. Will Anderson, a guy that just piled up all the pressures in college, you know, enormous pressure rate, and Darnell Wright was not having any of that. So I had to mention that too. Now, Froton, moving up to the top two offensive tackles, I think you're in the same boat with me where these guys are very close. On most lists you look at around the industry, they're very close. And so then it becomes about parsing things out. Well, let's talk about him. Who do you have as offensive tackle two in this class?
I'm going to go with Paris Johnson, Ohio State. And, man, like you said, you know, these two guys are very similar to me. You know, the incredible athleticism, incredible movement skills, you know, they can both set anchor, you know. Paris Johnson, 6'6", 3/8", 313 pounds, 36 and an eighth inch arm. So, you know, proportionally, the leverage he can play with is great. Fluidity, you know, everything, it's really tough. You're picking nits, really, when you're dealing with them. And, you know, 29 bench reps, 90 percentile mark, all of it. The only thing I would say that I'm kind of, you know, separated Jones a little bit from Johnson is his hand leverage isn't what I'd like to see when he's engaged a little bit. You know, I feel like he can be steered a little bit in a way that obviously the bigger tackles, you're not going to be able to move Darnell Wright or DeJuan Jones in the way that you could probably get into Paris Johnson. But at the same time, you know, his ability to do everything is supersedes that. I like to see him reset a little bit more when he gets kind of on the outside. Occasionally, he'll expose his chest, somebody will get inside, and he doesn't do the reset. He just kind of deals with it and at the collegiate level, he could drop anchor and be able to, you know, still stop that charge. But I have real concerns about some of the bigger 265, 270-pound base DEs when they get into his chest like that. So, you know, that was kind of, you know, the differentiating factor is just I felt like he could be out-leveraged at times in a way that Broderick Jones couldn't. But that's, you know, if you like Paris Johnson more than Broderick Jones, I'm not going to have any problem with it. And I understand.
Yeah, so I like it's, you know, I have Paris Johnson just slightly ahead of Broderick, but I mean very, very close. Paris Johnson, 5-star recruit, checked all the boxes in college. I mean, he definitely lived up to the billing, built in a lab frame for an offensive tackle. You mentioned he's an A-plus athlete. He makes a lot of stuff, a lot of the stuff that other guys where it's hard for them, that's easy for him. It's super hard for guys with either the speed, the pure speed guys, or the agility edge rushers. It's super hard to beat Paris Johnson because his weight is always perfectly distributed. That stuff is all textbook. And then his feet are so dang fast. He'll shuffle that arc with you. Like if someone wants to go around the long way in Paris Johnson, he'll shuffle in the arc to nowhere. Like, go ahead, pal. You know, like, I mean, the pass is going to be out a long time before you even get there and you're not nowhere even near CJ Stroud or whatever. The only question that I have with Paris Johnson is with the power. You know, he's one of those high cut, more lean type offensive tackles. He definitely not finesse. I mean, he plays with an edge, but in terms of the play power where this manifests, it's in the run game. He shoots out of the block super duper quick. He is always winning the interaction, like right off the jump or whatever, but he can sometimes end up ceding that advantage. Especially guys with play strength, they can come back on him. Because of that, like you see some waist bending there, you see some of the lunging into contact, basically trying to load up more for that initial pop because he knows that behind it, he doesn't have the horsepower in the lower half that some of the other guys do. You'd like to see him work a little bit more on that, but he does have that projectable frame. He's obviously, I mean, he's still early on that developmental arc. You know, he played the 1 year at guard and then right guard as a sophomore, then was left tackle last year. Those were, you know, and then, you know, his first year, he was a reserve or whatever, but declares after the 3 true years, this is a young kid, rangy, projectable frame. We just want to get some more strength in that lower half to hopefully help with the drive blocking. Cause again, he can get stopped sometimes with that, but I like the rest of the stuff. Love the kid's footwork, ridiculously fast feet. And when his punches land, he shocks people. You know, like it's like two defibrillators on the chest when he gets you. But you mentioned some of the cleaning up of the technical stuff because he's not always accurate with that. You know, that sort of nitpicky stuff, but stuff that we want to, you know, just see the edges polished off there with him. Now, my number two offensive tackle is your number one offensive tackle. Why don't you talk to the people about Broderick Jones for a ton?
Yeah, and we talk about those differentiators between Johnson and Jones, and you speak about punch, and that's something I think was a real factor for me. I love the punch that you get out of Broderick Jones. It's Golden Gloves-esque, you know, yeah. Quick, to the chest, effective, and for a guy with similar proportions to Paris Johnson, you know, it's 6'5 and 3/4, 3'11, you know, 3'11 and 3'13, similar in that way, and the athleticism, both of them freaks. 9.56 RAS for Broderick Jones, 1.67 second 10-yard split, which is lightning for a 300-pound guy. It's 99th percentile as well. And, you know, if you look at his performance, he's in the SEC. He's playing the best of the best. You're getting everything thrown at you on a weekly basis. Third highest pass block rating, according to PFF this year, you know, in the entire Power 5. So he's doing it against the best competition. I love his punch. It kind of makes up for the fact that he is a little bit, you know, could conceivably be light for NFL standards, but the feet are lightning quick. If if I had to have a criticism of him, is he almost fires out and gets ahead of himself too much because he is so fast and he wants to be out there on the screens. You see Georgia, a lot of work, James Cook, Kenny McIntosh, part of that Todd Monken, their offensive coordinator, their offense is getting those quick shots out to, you know, quick hits out to the running backs in the flats and let them work. And Broderick Jones is a big part of that whole game plan. And when you see him fire out sometimes on, you know, a linebacker in those sets or even on cornerbacks, he'll get ahead of himself, and guys can just sort of give him the ole, be like, oh, I see this coming, goodbye, and make the play. That's the one thing where he's a little impatient on getting out there when it comes to his run fit, you know, and the screens. But, you know, that's really the only thing I see. I love the way he drops anchor. He handled, you know, some of the best edge rushers that you're dealing with. And I was impressed. So I had to go with Jones numero uno.
Yeah, and he just, you know, again, we're super duper splitting hairs between those two guys, especially because they're, I mean, you know, in overall talent, but they're also, like you mentioned before, they're just so similar. Like, you just line the two guys up. A lot of the strengths on the one profile, it's the same as the other one. A lot of the weaknesses, they're the same thing as well. Like, you know, for instance, the hand usage thing that I was talking about with Johnson, I want the accuracy to improve a little bit more with Broderick, but like you mentioned, he's the power in his hands. It's ridiculous. Like, he hits you, it shocks the defender back to where then he has to recollect. You know, it's one of those, like, some of these guys, when they get their hands on you, it's not the same sort of jarring thing. It's used more for the control. They don't have that kind of power. But when Broderick Jones hits you flush in the chest, your engine's stalling for a little bit, and then you need to recollect yourself. And that really hurts, obviously, in your pass rush and rep. I like what you had said about when Jones gets out to the second level. That's something that I had noticed too. Sometimes he comes in hot, you know, and he can either overrun or he won't get the flush yet because he doesn't have his weight in on him. And then other times it's like he wants to be more of like a battering ram and like, you know, have that impressive like home run shot when he goes out and gets a second level guy, as opposed to just sealing him away from the play side. And that's where you saw some stuff of like guys getting away from Broderick Jones that shouldn't have. He's too athletic, and he plays too fierce and everything like that for the second level thing not to be just a given as a part of his game. And all the tools are there. He always gets out there post haste, you know, and gets on the doorstep of guys, but he can get slipped because of some of those different things that we're talking about. But I'm very bullish on him as well. He's still learning the position too. You know, we mentioned the Paris Johnson. He had the 1 year starting at left tackle in college. For Broderick Jones, it was like a year and a half, because Froton, as you remember, the first Georgia title run, Jamari Salyer gets hurt. And so then they move Broderick Jones over there. Broderick Jones was great. And obviously,
best thing that could have happened to that run, too. Jamari Salyer just was not cut out to be a tackle. He obviously isn't now. He wasn't drafted that way, or you go through the process last year of being a tackle. And if you look at him, my God, if anybody's built like a guard, it's Jamari Salyer. Just look at him. He's built like Ed Ingram from LSU, you know, like a bullfrog. You want a guard out of Jamari A. Clearly the right move.
1,000%. Yeah. And was the right move for Broderick Jones too. Cause yeah, that past year and a half, he has ascended to where he is in play to be the first offensive lineman off the board. Looks like we got a 3-horse race on that. We're going to talk about one of the horses that the other one that we haven't talked about here in a second. But before we dive into the interior offensive line class, I wanted to do a PSA about the Fantasy Pros 2023 NFL Draft Guide. Fabulous resource. You can find it at fantasypros.com/draft guide. It's got all the goodies that you guys like: scouting reports, mock drafts, big boards, analysts' favorite prop bets, which I may have placed a couple myself, looking at some of my colleagues' different picks. Froton, I know you're a big prop guy as well. And then, of course, the deep dives into sleepers and everything like that. And the best part about it is it's all free. But our premium subscribers can also get access to my deep dive scouting reports by position and into our Fantasy Pros Discord, where you can interact directly with our analysts. If you're a draft nick like myself, I strongly suggest going premium today if you haven't already. And do yourself a favor either way and check out our 2023 NFL Draft Guide now at fantasypros.com/draft guide. All right, for our time, we got the tackles out of the way. Let's hop right into the interior offensive line class. Give us your fifth one.
I go to Wisconsin with Joe Just the Tipman, 6'6", 313-pound center. Okay, you don't see many of those out there at 6'6", you know, with 32 3/4-inch arms, but that's why he's on the interior. You know, he's got the build to be a tackle, but those old arms, they're just not built for it. That being said, he really was a great fit there because of, even though he's taller and, you know, he is kind of long, very, very strong for his size. And it allows him to kind of, as opposed to, you know, a guy we'll talk about, John Michael Smith, where he's powering through blockers. Tippmann kind of envelops them, you know, where he has that size and that length and that weight where he just walls them off and brings them to where he wants them to be, especially in the run game where Wisconsin, you don't see them pulling their center a lot. You know, they're not doing that sort of thing. They're down blocking and they're coming right at you. There's not a lot of nuance to that Wisconsin game, but you know what's coming. And they were just absolutely attacking Tippmann's A-gap with Braylon Allen on many of the games I watched, especially like Ohio State. That's all they could pretty much do. Because Graham Mertz, let me tell you, he is not a particularly accurate quarterback. Wisconsin's, you know, offense was kind of against the eight. They were in trouble. They had to do something, and it was run the ball. And there wasn't a lot of disguising to be done. So I love the way that Tippmann would just get out there and lead the way, combo blocks, you know, hit the guy on the left, get out to the second level, take on that linebacker. And those linebackers rarely got around him because he's just great in terms of his positioning. So you can tell he's a sharp guy. Did have 6 penalties, you know, in 2022. That's obviously something that you don't want to see from anybody. But with a center, you can have a little more. There's sometimes false starts, snaps, and things of that nature. But excellent in pass protection when they did ask him to do that. Really tough. He kind of stands right up. Isn't, you know, doesn't go and hit right out of the snap, but he'll kind of stand, boom, he's up, and good luck kind of getting around him. I feel like I talked to him a little bit at the combine, and one of the things that he talked about, and, you know, on the other side, conversely, Keanu Benton, who was one of my favorite defensive tackles from this class, he talked about when, you know, every day in practice, what helped prepare him for the Big Ten. He's like, man, I had to go up against Joe Tippmann every single day in practice. He's like, trust me. He's like, that gets you ready. When you go up against Tippmann every day, I was ready for anything that anybody was going to throw at me, even in, you know, a vaunted conference like the Big Ten. So, you know, it's an iron sharpens iron thing, too, in some of these big programs. It really does help develop these players. But the big thing with Tippmann, I think, from my perspective, just staying low. You know, it's 6'6". It's all about make sure you maintain that low center of gravity as best he can. Because as long as he's set and he's face up, like, he's fine. But sometimes he will lunge. And that'll allow, you know, more savvy and, you know, technical defensive tackles to kind of turn him. So that's my one real criticism. But that's why he's down here at number 5.
Yeah, I have Tippmann at 6 in the interior offensive line class. I like him a lot. I think he set that up well. My 5th guy for the interior offensive line is Cody Mauch from NDSU. Was their left tackle these past couple years, but profiles as a guard. You have lack of length and then a bit of lack of play strength when you're talking about like on the outside there, particularly in some schemes. But there's a lot to love about the kid's game, and there's a lot to love about his personality. He was charming us all down in Mobile during the Senior Bowl at his podium session. Cody Mauch goes to college, 234-pound walk-on tight end. Gained over 70 pounds, you know, via basically NDSU, that they have their vaunted strength and conditioning program. But it was funny, I was asking him about this at his podium session in Mobile, and I thought I was queuing him up to like compliment the NDSU strength and conditioning program, because, you know, even like FBS programs like go there and they want to see like how NDSU does it. But Cody Mauch instead talked about the all-you-can-eat buffets in the student cafeterias at NDSU. He's a big, stromboli guy for Otom, which for whatever it's worth, you can add that to your scouting report. But in addition to being a big, stromboli guy, amazing athlete, you know, obviously in a really good frame too. He's almost 6'5", 305, but 96th percentile three cone. Three cone's one of those tests where for offensive line, it's at the very top. You can pick out the sleepers in almost every single offensive line class by who dominates the three cone unexpectedly. Like, we could go back, you know, several years and just go every single year with it. Then the other agility drill, Mauch was 90th percentile in the short shuttle, 93rd percentile 10-yard split. And you see that he gets off the line super fast. And then 85th percentile 40-yard dash. He plays ticked off, but in a fun way. You know, he like NDSU, they put out like a highlight reel of all of his, he does like the first down sort of celebration. So I guess so the skill guy didn't have to do it, but he, you know, he has a long flowing red hair and then he's missing his 2 front teeth. He's just like a fun presence around. Like, you could see that his teammates down at the Senior Bowl were feeding off of him too. The mobility is the best aspect of his game. You especially, you know, NDSU did obviously a run first team. A lot of the concepts that they had in their zone system was having Mock going out to the second level, and linebackers are terrified because you're about to go for a ride. You know, it's like you're about to get in the barrel and get shoved down the hill. That, you know, was just ragdolling people out there. So very good at that. Some of the technique on the outside, you wonder about that because he can get a little bit over aggressive. He can get over his skis sometimes, perhaps a compensatory mechanism to try to make up for that lack of length. You know, the bridge doesn't get quite far enough. So you're sort of trying to will it into existence by lunging a little bit, but then he could get crossed up a little bit. That's where his athleticism started to get stolen from him in those instances when he'd lose his base a little bit. On the inside, especially with a zone team at guard, that stuff all projects super duper smooth. Like we just know it does. He was dominant at the FCS level. I'm not scared about him going to the next level just because we've seen all the concepts proven as far as the athletic profile. So I'm putting him at number five. He reminds me a bit of Cole Strange from last year, where the surprise late first round pick, you know, with and the amazing athletic profile, whatever. But even with the amazing athletic profile, everyone thought he was going to go day two. Even the Rams, there was that funny video where the Rams thought he was going to go in round three. But again, another guy who just dominated those agility drills. And even at the lower level, you could see all the movement on film, which you can easily project to the next level. Mock, again, moving from left tackle, presumably to the inside. At least that's my supposition. But I think he's going to translate just about the same in terms of being a guard. All right, Froton, let's talk about your fourth interior offensive lineman. You're only going 2 hours, I guess it would be, east of Fargo for this guy. Talk to us about John Michael Schmitz.
Yeah, we're staying in the same region. John Michael Jingleheimer Schmitz, his name is my name, too. Senior Bowl superstar. Arguably, I mean, I would think of the offensive lineman there, one of the true stars of the Senior Bowl. I mean, yep. Good luck defeating him with anything. In that setting, you want power, you want to try to go around him, you're going to give him a spin, and he was absolutely smothering, and really, you know, against the best talent in the country, of course. Two sacks allowed, 8 pressures, but a 98.3%, you know, success rate there on the interior. Across the board, one of the highest graded offensive linemen, regardless of position, you know, by PFF. Excellent run blocker, so precise with his run fits. He's always so clean in his combo blocks, getting the second level. It's just, you know, in terms of a fully formed, projectable, a type of guy who can step right in, really make a difference in the run blocking and your offensive line in general. Like, you look at Schmitz, and the best thing I could say is I feel like you could have a Creed Humphrey type effect. Like, you saw what he did with Kansas City in terms of like what that guy in the middle of the line making the line calls like Schmitz did all season long for 2 years, and just having somebody who brings that all together, how valuable it could be. I really think that Schmitz is in that caliber.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Schmidt, he was telling us during like the pre-draft process, you know, he would keep saying, you know, I'm not a center, I'm an interior offensive lineman. You know, he's trying to make sort of the argument that to the NFL that I can play three positions, you know, maybe open himself up a little bit more with possibilities of getting drafted, whatnot. But if it's me, I'm keeping him in the pivot. You mentioned how smart he is there, making all the line calls. There's no blitz or stunt that's going to get beyond him. And the guys are always perfectly lined up, whatnot. Like, he's just sort of like a teacher like that. You know, it's like everybody get in line or whatever. But, you know, he has those 10,000 hours in the cockpit. He's so experienced and was awesome at Minnesota. I mean, he could have been in the draft last year and been a day two pick. He wanted to go back for one more year, and he played it out, was an All-American last year, was a Remington finalist. And you mentioned the elite play that the past couple of years, very smart kid. But yeah, because of the lack of length and because the power is only average, maybe slightly above average there. That's why I can't put him any higher than three, but you're going to be able to plug him in immediately. And I love the call out that you had for Creed Humphrey there, a kid who fell criminally below where he should have gone. You know, that year, I think I had him as a late first rounder. He ends up going late second, in part because of the, you know, there's only so many teams that are looking for the center, you know, which again is the reason why Schmidt in the pre-draft process was like, I can play guard too, guys. But like, if he does end up falling into the latter part of round two, he's going to be a steal, because it's the same thing. You put him in right away, he's going to be an above average NFL starting center next year and then going forward. But to me, his value is more like the early, you know, the first half of the second round. So I had him. He was my number three guy. Froton, why don't you talk about your number three interior offensive lineman, who is my number four, Steve Avila from TCU.
Yes, Steve, Viva Avila. Anybody who watched the magical run that the Horned Frogs had this year, chances are at some point their eyes were directed to Steve Avila's incredible blocking. Now, the beauty of Avila is he is versatile. And as you mentioned, Schmitz wanted to be known as an interior offensive lineman. Well, you don't have to stretch that with Avila. He actually has more snaps at center over his collegiate career than he does at guard. You know, that being said, he played guard exclusively last season, but the previous two seasons he played center. So a true interior offensive lineman who can move along wherever you need him to in those three spots. Didn't allow any sacks last year, you know, allowed four hits, but that was 1,100 plus pass rush reps over the course of those four hits in the past 3 years. So very, very accomplished in that respect as well. And as we talked about, you know, the importance of interior offensive linemen and their ability to make line calls and know what their responsibilities are. Man, throughout the course of that season, you would see Avila cleaning up for their center, Alan Ali, who was not the greatest, like Muhammad, and Brandon Coleman, their left tackle. So much cleaning up. You see them consistently. When I'm watching Avila, he's telling them, he's cleaning up. Here's what you did wrong after the play, looking over. You can see that he's clearly the field general there. Love that about him. And when I liked seeing him against Texas and how he performed, where the Texas Longhorns had what I perceived to be outside probably Iowa State, because that's just sort of the style that they played. Their raw run defense was exceptional. Keontae Coburn and Moro Ojomo in the middle. It's got a couple of real solid interior defensive linemen. He had a game against both of those guys who I really respect and have a great, you know, saw both of them at the Shrine Bowl. Avila handled both those guys. And anytime you're watching Kendre Miller run that A, that B gap, they're running to Avila's side. And when Miller got hurt, will be drafted this year, Amari Demarcado came in the playoff and ran for 150 yards. So it just speaks to just how good that offensive line was. And frankly, Avila running the show.
Yeah, Avila is very fun. There's a lot to like about his game and his profile, and he had really fun tape. You were mentioning the pass pro ability of him. Didn't allow a single sack last year, 515 pass blocking snaps. Then, of course, you have the versatility, you know, either guard or center. And literally with him, you could play him either one. With, you know, with Schmidt, I think, you have to do a little bit more of a leap of faith because the concept hasn't been proven as much. But Avila's game is going to be able to get handled at either one. I probably just look at him right now as a guard. But if I'm a team that needs a center, not a guard, and Avila's there, you know, like, and I need that spot plugged in my starting lineup, he and Avila's there in round two. Yeah, we're having a conversation about Avila there, you know, especially if Schmidt is already off the board. Love the pass pro. He's one of those interior guys who is very, he's more like a tackle in terms of his shuffle. You know, like there's technical aspects of his game that I really like that. There's other aspects of his game that he, you know, in terms of approach and technique that he needs to work on a little bit. The hand usage and the footwork, if he can sort of polish off the edges on those, he's going to play up as a player. And then sometimes you see he's one of those peppy, feisty guys out there, and he wants to bury people. And sometimes, you know, we talked about a couple kids like this where when they go out hunting and they're on the second level, they're trying to like literally put you in the ground. They want a gravestone over you for that. When as the offensive line coach in the NFL, going to be like, man, you don't need to load up that much. You don't need to lunge into the contact. You need to keep your base under you and just make sure that you wall that guy off from the play side. That's really the only job here. So, you know, you don't need the theatrics with it. But, outside of that, I love Avila's game, and he's my fourth interior offensive lineman. Froton, let's move on your list now. We have now reached the top two. We have the same top two and in the same order for this interior offensive line class. Talk to us about Osiris Torrence from Florida.
Osiris Torrence making the move from Louisiana following his head coach, Billy Napier, who got hired at Florida last year. And hey, he said, I'm ready to take the step up to the SEC East. And he did. I mean, he is a giant human being when it comes to strength. Like, there's really no doubt about his strength. His hands are absolutely, they're on you and they're not coming off you. You're not doing, there's no counter you're going to do to Osiris Torrence to dislodge his hand. So good luck with that. His punch, if there's criticism, he's a little slow. You know, he's a big guy. 23 and a half inch vert shows that he's not propelling that giant frame of his, you know, in the way that, you know, you maybe hope for, you know, a prototypical move type guard. But man, everything that's in front of him, he's clearing out of his way. Zero sacks, penalties last year. His upper body, the torque he has when he's engaged and he's driving you. Good luck. You're moving. You're not going to be able to get out of that way. Again, it's pretty much the only real criticism I have is just a little bit in terms of his shuffle, you know, lateral movement. His feet definitely plays a little bit heavy because he is so big. But the power is there and the production's there. And he's done it at two levels. And, you know, with the type of strength and the power that he has, I think he has to be that number two.
Yeah, and the thing you were talking about there at the very end, you know, with regards to some of the, you know, the foot speed and the shuffling and some of the athletic stuff not being quite as ambulatory, that's the reason why he's confined to guard. You know, that's why he's not a right tackle, for instance, but he's a fabulous guard. I mean, that's why we rank him as high as we do, and that's why the kid's got a shot to go in the first round. The floor on him is very, very high. And then you have the huge ceiling as well, at that position. But you have to keep in mind that he's confined there, which that brings the value down just a little bit. But love what you said about, you know, that Osiris Torrance going from Louisiana, where he was playing under Billy Napier there, but, you know, in the Fun Belt. And then last year he transfers along with Napier, moves along with him to Gainesville at Florida. Well, last year he was a first team All-American. So he went up to the highest level of college football, proved the concept again. The SEC power rushers, it was the same thing. He just swat them away like they were gnats. But you are not beating this kid with power. It's just it's just not going to happen. I have in my notes, as big as a power plant and equipped with nuclear reactor strength. And you mentioned the hands, 11 1/4 inches, just has these enormous, like, first baseman glove type hands. And when he latches onto you, you're going where he wants, and you're not getting out of hell until that referee blows the whistle. It just is what it is. But yeah, some of that mobility stuff that comes with being as big as he is, that's the only sort of nitpicks that you can have on his profile, but just not too many nits to pick with that kid when projecting him to a guard. He also my second interior offensive lineman. And Froton, let's move to the number one interior offensive lineman and that third horse in the race I was mentioning earlier to potentially be the first offensive lineman overall taken off the board later this month in April. Tell us about Peter Skoronski of Northwestern.
Sure. And we've heard a lot about Peter Skoronski throughout this whole process. And the big thing with him is you got to remember he played left tackle over at Northwestern, but he could have played anywhere on the line. Really incredibly versatile, plus athlete. His jumps were 98th percentile, 1.7 second 10-yard splits, 96th percentile. You know, you're not worried in terms of how he projects athletically. Big thing is his arms, you know, 32 and a quarter inch arms. And it shows on tape, you know, when he's playing against the more elite guys of the Big Ten, you see that can be an issue when it comes to leverage where he can be directed at times. But the thing is, his footwork is so clean and it's so good that he's able to stay in front of most of those players. He did a great job against, for instance, George Karloftis last year, Aiden Hutchinson the year before. Like, he talked about dealing with power. He dealt with the power. You know, I do feel like, you know, maybe speed a little bit, you know, hurt him because of having the ability to enrapture those players and get outside of his frame with those arms. But, you know, that's really nitpicking. I do think, as, you know, I rank him as an IOL, I do think he ends up here just because of the practicality of the position. But much like Rashawn Slater, fellow Northwestern lineman who had sort of on the shorter side arms, he made the transition and he's been an extremely valuable piece for the Chargers protecting Justin Herbert. He's been invaluable. So there's value there. I think that's a great comp for him. Very similar play style, come to the same place. So no reason to not be very confident in his ability to make the transition.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So Skoronski was the first five-star to ever sign with Northwestern. And then he just, you know, during that wonky COVID year 2020, you'll recall, for Froton, Rashawn Slater decides to sit that season out. Well, who did they slip in for Rashawn Slater into the starting lineup? They're like, Peter Skoronski, come on down. And that's where he's been for the last 3 years. kind of crazy program that has fallen as far as Northwestern has, that they have now, what is it, 5-6 straight years of just elite left tackle play. That, and they may have two first rounders this year with Adebowale.
Yeah, Adebowale. Yeah.
Yeah, if he ends up getting in there. So that would be kind of crazy. Northwestern, a team that didn't win in North America last year, as you know, for a time. My favorite stat from college football last year was there was only two teams that didn't lose on a continent. It was Georgia and then Northwestern, because they beat Nebraska when Scott Frost was punting games to try to get fired in Ireland in the opener last year. But Skoronski, it was sort of like, you know, he goes there as this five-star kid, and they don't have other guys like that. Like, Quentin Johnson was the second best recruit that Gary Patterson ever signed at TCU, but at least there was guys that had been around in that phylum of his. Skoronski was sort of in uncharted territory, and especially here over these last couple of years, Northwestern just fell on its face. They still had a couple good players out of Boare. The other guy on offense was Evan Hall. But, you know, outside of that, the nine other guys, you're just not getting much help. But yet Skoronski just jumps off the film when you're watching him. The athleticism speaks for itself. He's now proven the concept of that at the NFL Combine. He did every test but the short shuttle and was, you know, 93rd, whatever percentile, 94th, whatever it was. And you see all those gifts when he plays. He's so fast and springy off the line. He gets on top of you really quick. And then he's a technician. You know, it's all like, you know, he's worked on this for so long. It's another thing of like the 10,000 hours with it. You can just see all the work he's put in with it. He's a kid who always, his lower half is always married to his top half, doesn't get out over his skis. You know, the hand usage is good. It's very good. It's just, you mentioned that the one picadillo of his is on the edge when he's facing like the long levered power type edge rushers. Those were the guys that could get into his pads first. And that's how you start to you know, how you could neutralize Skoronski at the college level on the outside. There was very few that could do it, because you had to have that kind of physical ability, that kind of power, and that kind of length to get into his pads. But of course, there's going to be way more of those guys at the NFL level, which is why we project him inside. Why do we love him anyway? Because we've seen this player over and over again. You mentioned Rashawn Slater. I comp him to Zach Martin. That's another natural one. Same sort of thing, where Zach Martin was a dominant tackle at Notre Dame, and they became immediately dominant guard at the NFL level. Brandon Scherff. I mean, we could just go on and on. We've seen this guy over and over and over again. And when you put him at guard, he's going to dominate. Could he play right tackle at the next level? Yeah, he probably could. I just think like the guard transition, it's just so clean, and he's going to be a pro bowl. Well, pro bowler don't mean nothing no more, because now Tyler Huntley was in it last year, but he has all pro potential pretty quick out of the gate there at guard. So love Skoronski, but yeah, we're sending him inside. Froton, last question for you today. We just raced through our top fives, both offensive tackle and interior offensive line. The last question I have for you, going over both these classes, the tackle and the interior class, who is one guy in there that stood out to you as a sleeper, a guy that you think is going to get underdrafted and then is going to overperform his draft slot when he gets to the NFL?
Yeah, I like Jackson Kirkland for the University of Washington. I got to see a lot of him at the Shrine Bowl where I was. And in terms of getting to talk to him, you know, probably had a good 15-minute session with him, getting to talk to the coaches around him, spoke with Mark Bruner, former tight end for this and current scout for the Pittsburgh Steelers and University of Washington. And, you know, he raves about the character, the family, everything with Kirkland. And then, you know, when you watch him play, even though, you know, he played left tackle there at Washington, he's another guy that I project will not have the feet and the footwork to play on in space at the next level. But I think if you kick him inside, Jackson Kirkland was not there getting overpowered. His hand placement was excellent, keeps his chest clean. A lot of the little things you like to do as an offensive lineman you like to look for, I feel like he does and is pretty well schooled in that sense. He was, you know, kind of rumored to potentially be a second-round pick last year. That didn't materialize. It definitely had to do with his footwork, but I see him inside. I see him being able to recover and, you know, being when he's working in within the confines of the line, I think he can really do it at left guard. So I think at fifth, sixth round, you could get a 5-6 year starter at Jackson Kirkland.
I love the evocation of a guy named Kirkland being had for a discount, sort of Kirkland brand in the draft. So yeah, when you get down to day three, definitely be checking out Kirkland.
On brand. Yeah.
Yes, indeedy. I need to get one of those Kirkland brand t-shirts. I seen that they were selling them at Walmart. But yeah, Kirkland, where he gets nicked, it's not a tackle. You know, like in the NFL, his feet are just too heavy for that. But the game is going to play at guard. So I definitely like that one. Froton, my sleeper for the offensive lineman, it's a kid named City Sow. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Eastern Michigan. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, because I love the kid's game. Is an awesome run blocker. Like, that part of his game just speaks for itself. There's some work that needs to be done with him in pass pro. EMU is not the most pass happy team. As you know, he got after the run blocking work. There's some technical things that he needs to work on in the pass pro game. But I think that area of his game, I think he's going to grow by leaps and bounds at the next level. You look at his athletic profile. He was almost 6'5", 323. And then the kid tested in 96, almost 97th percentile size adjusted athlete by the RAS system. And he didn't duck any tests like some of these kids do. They'll duck one, they'll duck two, they'll duck three. City Sow did every single one, including the bench press, and still put up that, you know, essentially 97th percentile. And the frame is awesome and projectable. The way he plays the game is also projectable. Like I said, he gets after it. This is a kid who is being viewed right now as a long-term project type, who you bring in and then maybe, you know, a year or two down the road that he gets in the lineup. I definitely think he has that ceiling for sure that some other people see, but I think he has a higher floor than other people do, because again, the run blocking thing is going to translate, and he's immediately an awesome NFL athlete in this ideal physical package. I think City's always being slept on right now, and I think he's going to be a guy that is available for, to use your words, Froton, a Kirkland discount on draft day. That is all the time we have for you guys today. Unfortunately, I could talk about this stuff with you all day, Froton. For Eric Froton, I am Thorne Eichstrom. Thank you for being with us. And tune in next week as I'm joined by another special guest for a deep dive into the front seven prospects in this year's draft.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my six decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again,
with new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network,
available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.